Hey guys, how's it going? Yeah, I love that clip of John Hagee. You know, if I have it right, I think that's the clip where he goes, well, you know, it says here that it'll be an army of millions of unbelievers marching on the Middle East. So who else could that be except the Chinese? It's the coming Chinese conquering of the entire Middle East as prophesied in the Bible. You could get raptured right out of this building right now. Only you'll believe. All right. Oh, and sign up your son for the armed forces. Yeah. All right. So I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. John Hagee, if you're not familiar, there's YouTubes of him. You might have a good time laughing your ass off watching the horrible things he says. The ridiculous things. All right. Today's Thursday. So how about Gareth Porter Day? Gareth's going to be on. You know why? Because he wrote a thing. And it's really important, and I want to ask him about what he wrote. You want to know the title of it? Sunni Alliances, Trump, Obama Administration, Terrorism Concerns in Syria. I know. But Scott, that's the same story every day since exactly 4 years ago. I know. But it still is. That's what's news, is that here we are a year out from the declaration of the caliphate, and America is still on the side of Osama's legions. As the late, great Jeff Huber said, boy, I wish Jeff Huber was still around, man. Talk about unfair that he died in his 50s. Jesus, man, come on. He said, though, Bin Laden, he's dead and loving it. He's more successful than any general in American history, and all from, you know, hiding in his attic, even from his own wife. His Islamo-fascist caliphate amounting to exactly one room in the world, and yet has moved greater armies and changed political lines and determined the course of future history as much as any other leader. Just by using the Americans as his useful, stupid, stinking idiots. Wasn't too hard. Anyway, so yeah, there you go. America continues to back its allies, which continues to back America's enemies. And you gotta ask yourself, conservatives, how come none of my conservative intellectual leadership, if I dare call it that, ever points out that Obama is on the side of Osama in Syria? You know, they complain all day. They crucify him over a lack of security at Benghazi, right? Not fighting a war for a bunch of Mujahideen and then helping them run a bunch of guns to their Mujahideen friends in Syria and leaving a bunch of Americans based smack dab in the middle of a hornet's nest of their enemies, right? Not for that. But just the fact that there were consequences of that policy. Oh, they get mad about that. You know what happened in Benghazi? Some people got killed. People who could be alive right now if they hadn't have been killed. Do you know that? Why, that's controversial. That's a scandalous scandal. And yet, tell me, where's Michael Wiener, the communist? I mean, Michael Savage, the conservative. Huh? And Hugh Hewitt. And Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. All the Rush clones, all the after Rush clones on AM talk radio. How come they're not going on and on about Obama backing, in effect, for years on end now, backing Al-Qaeda in Syria? Right, it's because they are even worse than him on the issue. They want regime change against Al-Qaeda's enemy, Bashar al-Assad, and his Baathist regime, even more than Obama does. Why? Because that's what Israel wants. And so the entirety of American conservatism is on the side of Ayman al-Zawahiri in Syria, and they have been. And their only complaint about Obama is he hasn't done enough yet. And their slightest excuse is that, no, all we wanted to do was back up an army of moderates that would fight al-Nusra and the Islamic State and the Assad regime and Hezbollah all at the same time. And then create a new, moderate, democratic Syria. You know, like what they achieved in Libya and in Iraq before that. You know, back the moderates. Even though for 4 years straight, the moderates have said, oh, thanks for the money. Here's the weapons the CIA gave us. This whole time. When John McCain went and palled around with the Northern Storm Brigade, they were already on the record on the World Wide Web at Time.com. Yeah, you know, like Time Magazine. They were already on the record, right there in video, their leader, the Northern Storm Brigade, saying, yeah, I'm a veteran of the Iraq War. In other words, he was part of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, fighting for Zarqawi against the Americans. Or at least, the Americans certainly would have insisted that any foreigner, especially any Syrian, that came to Iraq to fight against the Americans, were part of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Were part of Zawahiri's legions. But, hey, John McCain and Elizabeth Obagi, the pretend PhD expert, why, they vetted the Northern Storm by doing everything except Googling them. There are no moderates. The mythical moderates. The Free Syrian Army. Patrick Coburn and Robert Fisk both say, what Free Syrian Army? They're all the same. I mean, yeah, maybe there are groups that are called that. It's all just one mess of Sunni bin Ladenite jihadists. You ask a member of the Free Syrian Army and a member of the al-Nusra Front what they think about September 11th, and they say the exact same thing. They supported it. They're for it, and they'd like to see more of them. And if you don't like it, they'll chop your head off. Just type in FSA. Those are the moderates, the mythical moderates. Just type in FSA beheading. FSA suicide attack. Oh, yes, they're so moderate over there when they're not outright defecting to al-Nusra and ISIS and bringing all their guns and equipment with them. But, yeah, you know, this, I think, even beyond the empire and beyond the police state, the scandal of our age, even beyond liberal, almost complete liberal acquiescence to the empire, under the Obama administration, when they pretended so bad to fight it before under Bush. I think the scandal of our age, trumping all of those, is the stupidity of the conservative audience in America. When here Obama is backing Osama, and you're just waiting around for Rush Limbaugh to tell you that you're supposed to be concerned about that, rather than concerned about the fact that Assad is the last thing standing between them and the beheading of every last Christian and Shiite and Druze. And is that how you say the singular of Druze? Druze, I think. In the whole damn place. And actually, I kind of have to take that back to a small degree. I read a thing once where Rush Limbaugh was actually getting this right. Well, mostly right. I forgot how it ended. It was all screwed up at the end. He was attacking Obama for this a little bit. But my criticism about the larger conservative movement and conservative leadership and what makes a scandal, who decides what is a Democratic Party scandal, and the kinds of things that they decide are scandals, and what it takes to get conservatives to see through this kind of crap. We're supposed to hate, any Americans are supposed to hate and fear Bashar al-Assad more than the al-Qaeda guys who are still sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City? And this is crazy. This is lunacy. And the only reason the conservatives won't attack the liberals about it is because the conservatives are even worse. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Robertson at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, guys. You know, I just wanted to talk to Mitch Prothero today. I guess that ain't going to happen. That'll ever happen to him. He's over there in a rock somewhere. His Skype thingy is yellow. God dang it. But anyway, he wrote this pretty good review of last year of the Islamic State there. I'm going to sneeze. You're going to have to hang on a second here. Oh, no. Whew. Boy. Well, it was just one. That was lucky. All right. Yeah, dude. Gareth's coming on in a minute to talk about Obama and the entire city of Washington, D.C.'s highest treason on behalf of the American people's only real enemies in the world. That's coming up in just a minute, but, well, here's one about one of our adversaries, one of our so-called allies, the Israelis. Also backing Al-Qaeda in Syria. Different article here. Spy virus linked to Israel targeted hotels used for Iran nuclear talks. This is in the Wall Street Journal from yesterday. And I had this yesterday, but I'm sorry I didn't get to it. I had a lot of interviews and very little time, and I think I was talking about the cops instead. Anyway. Wall Street Journal yesterday. When a leading cybersecurity firm discovered it had been hacked last year by a virus widely believed to be used by Israeli spies, it wanted to know who else was on the hit list. It checked millions of computers worldwide, and three luxury European hotels popped up. The other hotels the firm tested, thousands in all, were clean. Researchers at the firm, Kaspersky Lab, ZAO, weren't sure what to make of the results. Then they realized what the three hotels had in common. Each was targeted before hosting high-stakes negotiations between Iran and world powers over curtailing Tehran's nuclear program. Pretty sloppy, right? You know, hack Kaspersky, it seems like those are the guys who'd be able to find it. Then you use the same damn virus you used on them on somebody else. And, you know, I don't know, that's either stupid or they, why would they want us to know that, you know? Doesn't seem to make sense. We're talking about government employees, though, even if they're Israeli ones. Stupid idiots. Anyway, this spyware, the firm has now concluded, was an improved version of Dooku, a virus first identified by cybersecurity experts in 2011, according to a Kaspersky report reviewed by the Wall Street Journal and outside security experts. Current and former U.S. officials and many cybersecurity experts believed Dooku was designed to carry out Israel's most sensitive intelligence collection operations. Senior U.S. officials learned Israel was spying on the nuclear talks in 2014, a finding first reported by the Wall Street Journal in March. Officials at the time offered few details about Israel's tactics. Kaspersky's findings, which the Moscow-based company is expected to disclose publicly Wednesday, shed new light on the use of a stealthy virus in the spying efforts. The revelations could also provide what may be the first concrete evidence that the nuclear negotiations were targeted and by whom. And remember now, in their story from March, it was all about how the Israelis were finding out some things, but just enough so they could lie and spin to who? Directly to the U.S. Congress. Oh, America's going to give this much sanctions relief, and then they times it by 10. And they're going to have this many centrifuges, and they add another few thousand on there, and whatever it is. So, not only are our closest allies in the whole wide world, our bestest friends, the only democracy in the Middle East if you don't count half their population as human beings at all. that they would do such a terrible thing. Not just would they spy, but then they turn around and lie to try to sabotage America's foreign policy. And speaking of which, sorry, another tangent. I saw a headline this morning where Charles Schumer basically was saying, hey, sorry, if I gotta, and this was the quote, I believe, was it at Mondo Weiss? Let me get this right, as long as I'm doing this. It was at Mondo Weiss. Yeah, it was. Schumer, check this out. Charles Schumer says Jewish and American interests on Iran differ. Well, that's surely not what he meant. Israeli and American interests on Iran deal differ. But he has to do what's right for the United States. That's a poorly written headline, Phil Weiss. I gotta complain. MondoWeiss.net. And I know that Phil would agree with me about that. What the hell? That's Mondo Weiss's whole point, right? Their reason day, whatever the hell. Anyway, New York Senator Chuck Schumer told a New York Jewish audience a week ago that the U.S. and Israel have very different interests regarding a possible Iran deal. And as a senator representing Americans, he may determine that the deal is in his country's best interest. In a remarkably frank discussion of dual loyalty, he said his concern for Israel comes second. Quote, I have to do what's right for the United States first of all, and Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, second. Schumer says his opposition to the deal has made President Obama, quote, mad, but then suggested he's going to come around. He told the Jewish group that a military strike on Iran may not work and could cause the deaths of tens of thousands of Israelis. I don't know how the hell he figures that. A deal will give the United States greater control over Iran's program than it would have without a deal. Could certainly lead to the deaths of tens of thousands of Iranians whose lives are worth just as much, by the way. A deal will give the U.S. greater control over Iran's program than it would have without a deal. No doubt about that. So there you go. And this was a thing. I think he's been under a lot of pressure, and there were, and this was something covered on Mondo Weiss too. There were liberal groups who confronted him about this and said, man, we're going to war with you if you undermine Obama on this thing. You cannot do that. And apparently they have succeeded in putting him in check. And you know what else too? Just think of the way he frames it. Like, yeah, it's true. I'm a Zionist. I'm a senator from New York. I have a huge responsibility toward Israel. But in this case, I'm going to have to side with America, right? It's just too much. Not for the Republicans, but too much for Charles Schumer. And, you know, it looks like he's going to be the next majority leader of the Senate. Can you believe that? God help us. Oh, wait. Do the Democrats rule the Senate anymore? Jeez. You know what? I don't care enough to keep track. No, I guess Harry Reid is out, and now it's Mitch McConnell's the majority leader, right? Yeah, I'm stupid, sir. He's going to be the minority leader of the Senate. Well, a Senate is nothing but window dressing anyway, right? And got your little white marble monuments there in Washington, D.C. And then you have the National Security State, which is the size of the rest of America, the rest of the world, and America's empire over it. All right. Anyway, there you go. Our friends, the Israelis, spying on our efforts to keep them safe. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still. If you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Rad, Jason Ditz is going to be on the show, y'all, to talk about Yemen. Ooh, and Libya, too. Hang on. And Libya. Okay, cool. All right. Hey, I got Gareth Porter on the line. Hey, Gareth, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing good. Very happy to have you back on the show here. Everybody, you know Gareth Porter. He wrote the book on Iran's nuclear program. It's called Manufactured Crisis. An apt title. Quite apt. It's about how they never were making nuclear weapons, man. It's all a bunch of hype, and boy, oh boy, every detail. It's in there. Manufactured Crisis. He writes for Truth Out and for Middle East Eye, and yeah, he's good on a lot of stuff. He's got a brand new one here called Sunni Alliances, Trump-Obama Administration Terrorism Concerns in Syria. And by the way, this is live, June 2015. I know that headline could be from any time in the last 4 years. But anyway, welcome back. Thanks very much. What's your article about here, Gareth?
Well, Scott, this is another effort to try to understand clearly what's really going on here in U.S. policy in Syria and in the context of the skullduggery that has become increasingly clear, being carried out by the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Turks to support al-Nusra Front, the al-Qaeda affiliate in Syria. You know, there's a long history here of contact, obviously, between the Turks as well as the other, the Gulf sheikhdoms involved in this effort. But this clearly turned a major corner late last year or last year, and then again earlier this year. They were clearly preparing for a major campaign before the end of 2014. There was something going on. We don't have the details about this yet exactly, but there was you know, there were contacts with the al-Nusra Front on the part of particularly the Qataris, and the Turks obviously have been dealing with them all along. But they were preparing them to, you know, talking to them about a major offensive and what they could do to support them. And then, of course, King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia died and was replaced by King Salman, who immediately introduced a much more aggressive stance toward Syria, as well, of course, as Yemen, a general impetus toward basically carrying out war to defeat their what they regard as Iranian influence in the region, and so all of this gelled very quickly in 2015 and produced a new command called the Army of Conquest, which was well endowed. We have now more reporting that indicates that they not only got communications equipment to improve their command and control, which is a key factor here in success in the war against the Assad regime, but also more weapons and funding. And so all of this has been happening since early 2015. And you know, then the question became, what is the U.S. role going to be in this? And the Qataris in particular were the lead, it appears, in dealing with the Obama administration. And so what we have seen happen since, let's say, April, when Obama invited the Gulf Cooperation Council states, meaning the Saudis, the Qataris, and three or four other Gulf sheikhdoms, to come to Washington, actually to come to Camp David for a summit meeting, the GCC people, led by the Qataris and the Saudis, believe that this was their opportunity to get the Obama administration committed not just to supporting their offensive through the al-Nusra front, but also, you know, doing the no-fly zone, which they've been calling for years. And the reason is because they said, well, you know, he needs us now because he wants this agreement with Iran very badly. And so we'll put the heat on him and say, unless you go along with our demands on Syria, you know, we're going to let you have it on Iran. And we're in a strong bargaining position now. That was being reported in the Arab press in Al Hayat in the days before the summit occurred. Summit meeting occurred in May. And so, you know, then the summit occurs, and there's no reporting whatsoever. Nothing comes out about what the discussions actually said with regard to Syria. There was talk about, you know, sort of generalities, but nothing specifically about Syria, except for David Ignatius. Mm-hmm. And Ignatius, of course, as you know and your listeners will know from the past experiences that have to do with him, is the court reporter. He's the one who gets the inside dope from either the White House or the National Security State institutions. And he reported afterwards that essentially, you know, what the president had said was that, you know, you guys, meaning Saudis and Qataris, you have to keep control of your clients so that we don't have a situation with extremists coming to power in Syria. Now, that's very different from saying, you guys cut out this business of, you know, building up on this front. Yeah. Essentially, he caved in and said, okay, you can go ahead and do it, but, you know, you've got better be careful.
Isn't that interesting that, I mean, why not just lie and say, oh, yeah, no, I told them you can support Ahrar al-Sham, who we all know are atheists or, you know, or Methodists or something, but no al-Nusra. Why not just say that?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, I think that it suggests that there is a very strong commitment to this line and that at some stage or at some level, you no longer feel comfortable just completely covering it up. And so, I mean, I think that's the explanation for why they didn't take that route.
Yeah. Well, now, it's funny, you know, Adam Johnson at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting had a piece about the 6 dozen times that America has begun to train and arm these guys over the last 4 years. And it's always reported as the beginning of a mission to go and do this. But something that I learned from Charles Lister, and that I couldn't find my footnote, and I was flipping out because I couldn't remember where the hell I read it, but then I was reminded by reading your piece here, because you refer to the very same thing. Charles Lister, the Al-Qaeda expert at the Brookings Institution, center-left, Democratic-type think tank.
You mean center-right, of course.
Well, that's what they call it. You know, the Democrats. Yeah, center-right. That's fair enough. And especially they're very Zionist now, and they're very Qatari because they get a lot of money that way.
Right.
But he was saying, yeah, there's an American, a joint American-Saudi base, and your keyword for Google searching audience is room, an American-Saudi room in Turkey where they're coordinating this whole thing.
Well, I have to be correct. I have to correct you on that. It's not precisely what he said. There's a nuance here. It's more than a nuance. It's a distinction between the U.S. Turkish coordination spot in Turkey near the border, obviously somewhere close to the border, and what they do. I mean, they're not actually coordinating the Army of Conquest. What they're doing is coordinating an approach to the arming and training of the people in Syria. Now, obviously, the Turks and the Americans don't agree on what needs to be done about that. So, exactly how that works out is a very interesting question that nobody has ever really discussed.
Yeah. But
anyway,
and the line between the people they're training and the Army of Conquest is something that, you know, I'm not sure.
Well,
where that
we'll
line
come
is
back to this in a moment, but I'll just explain what I think specifically happened in that case.
All right, good deal. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back with the great Gareth Porter, author of Manufactured Crisis and 10 million awesome articles right after this. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betray their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Talking with the great Gareth Porter, right here at Truth Out. Sunni alliances, Trump-Obama administration, terrorism concerns in Syria. Back to their concerns in a minute, but where we left off at the break was about the base. Just what exactly is this base in Turkey where the Americans and the Saudis are working together, and who exactly are they working with and who not or whatever?
Well, I'm not clear on exactly what role the Saudis are playing in this base in Turkey. But what I am clear on is what Lister said about the move that was made in April after the triumph of the Army of Conquest in Idlib, in capturing the province capital of Idlib. The very important change that took place here at the working level, obviously this is a CIA base in Turkey, and the CIA people who were in liaison with some of the Syrian small groups, presumably not very big ones, who were trying to figure out what they were going to do at that point, were being encouraged by their CIA handlers to join in the Army of Conquest, to participate in the after action, that is the next phase of the al-Nusra Front, and the Army of Conquest offensive in Idlib. So that indicated very clearly that there had been a Rubicon crossed of some sort at some level, where the U.S. was no longer resisting the strategy of the Saudis, the Qataris, and the Turks, and in fact was not cooperating with it. And presumably, I mean, the timing of that indicates or suggests very strongly that the CIA was convinced that now these people are such a strong force, it looks like they're going to be successful, so we better get on the bandwagon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they kind of floated some trial balloons about, yeah, we're going to rebrand them and we're going to have the Syrian al-Qaeda, if not denounce Zawahiri, announce that they no longer work with him, something like that. That didn't really work, but so no big deal. This is just plan B, is we'll just create a new umbrella group, and it'll be the guys that we're directly supporting fighting
side by side with these guys,
and our allies are supporting these guys.
The rebranding had not ended at that point. It was still underway. That was still part of the strategy that the Saudis and Qataris took to the Camp David summit. That was precisely that they would argue that you don't have to be embracing al-Qaeda. We'll rig up something so that there'll be an apparent divorce between al-Nusra Front and al-Qaeda. Mm. Make it easier for you. And, in fact, as I pointed out in at least the previous article that I did on this, Ignatius actually referred to that. Yeah, I reported it both of these stories, that Ignatius referred to the fact that there was a fix for this, what he called a tricky problem, that it was al-Nusra Front that was being supported in this new command, this new military command that was on the move, and that was what was, you know, apparently going to be happening in the going to be discussed in the Camp David summit. Then afterwards, of course, he didn't mention that, but you know, then there was a actual denial by the head of al-Nusra Front, Abu. See, what's his name now? I've forgotten his name. Abu. Yeah, it slipped my mind. But anyway, he gave an interview with Reuters in which he basically said, "No, you know, we're still part of Al Qaeda. We deny that there's anything going on with regard to divorce from Al Qaeda." Yeah. So then, you know, the rebranding took a different form, as it ultimately turned out. You know, when he gave the Al Jazeera interview, he basically said, "Look, you know, we are Al Qaeda, but we've been given our instructions from Al Qaeda that say, no, we're not going to do global jihadism. We're not going to attack the West. We're here to win the war against the Assad regime."
So, I'm living in a comic book here or something. You know, if only these guys would say that they don't love Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City, anymore. Yesterday they did, but now they don't. Then it would be fine, right? Then we could get them all brand new machetes for cutting people's heads off with. We could get them a whole new fleet of Saudi-bought Toyota trucks to do suicide attacks. It'd be great. They'll be moderate.
As it turns out, it's not necessary. You know, nobody's raising any problem in Washington, D.C. Yeah, there's not a single voice being raised about this.
Well, here's the thing, too. Like, you know, we've been covering this for years now. It's 2015 and a half right now. And, you know, I don't know, it was 2 or 3 years ago, I says to Flint Leverett, the former high-level CIA analyst and National Security Council and State Department official on this show, I said, look, if Saudi is giving all this money to the suicide bombers or their very best friends who fight right next to them and whatever, isn't that just like when Ronald Reagan had the Israelis sell missiles to Iran for him? It's just plausible deniability, and it's not very plausible. Nobody blames Israel for Iran-Contra. They just played one small role in it. It was Ronald Reagan's thing. Just like this entire time, Barack Hussein Obama has been fighting for Osama bin Laden's men, basically from the time, from the day after he killed Osama on, he's been backing Osama's men in Libya and in Syria, and he keeps on.
Well, I would put it differently.
He said, yeah, that you're right. That is not. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm paraphrasing my own and mixing up what Leverett said. I asked Leverett, isn't this just not very plausible deniability for an American policy? And he said, yes, that's exactly what it is. For Saudi to give all this money to these guys and for America to not even try to stop Saudi basically reveals all you need to know about what's going on here. And so then my question for you is, assuming that's true and you can dispute whatever you want there, isn't this all about David Wurmser and the clean break and the coping with crumbling states? We need to expedite the chaotic collapse and redirect and turn the Middle East into a boiling cauldron and all this crap, like Michael Ledeen says?
Well, certainly from the Israeli point of view, it's about, you know, setting up a situation where Iran, you know, where you can carry out regime change in Iran more easily. I mean, that's clearly, you know, the long-term interest that was put into play you know, by the neocons in the 1990s, and the Israeli government has wanted to do that, and they got support for that in the Bush administration for sure. But you know, I think there are there's a couple of different phases that things have gone through here. I mean, you know, it may well be that there was a very weak degree of resistance put up by the Obama administration as far as Syria is concerned. But there's a pretty strong record here that the Obama administration did not want to be involved in arming moderates except in very, very limited quantities and very limited circumstances. because they were afraid that it was going to that the arms were going to fall into the hands of al-Nusra and you know what ultimately became Islamic State, and so I you know I don't agree that they were deliberately egging the or saying yes to the Saudis going ahead and giving arms to al-Nusra Front in 2012-2013. I think that that's an earlier stage when the Saudis were in fact giving arms to other groups who then, you know, became part of al-Nusra Front, or you know, we broke up and essentially the arms ended up with al-Nusra Front. And so, I mean, I think you have to basically look at this in a you know more historical evolutionary way that the policy of the Obama administration has indeed changed. I mean, it has changed substantially, and it's changed because, for a complex of reasons, this administration no longer has the will to stand up to its Sunni allies. It's now decided that what's important is that we show that we're lined up with the Sunni allies. And basically, you know, nothing else matters. I mean, they've decided to sacrifice everything else. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that was the situation in 2013. Mm-hmm. I think it's a different situation now.
Yeah. Well, and you're saying all to get that nuclear deal. If they would just shut up about the nuclear deal and let us get it, we'll go
well,
ahead.
I mean, I think that's the immediate circumstance. That's true. But I think there's a deeper level of a deeper interest that is at stake here, and that is the whole national security state commitment to these alliances. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before, but it has to be repeated many times that the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA all have extremely important interests in you know at stake with the alliance with the Saudi Arabia, and the Pentagon more than anybody else. I mean, you know, they have their bases in Saudi. They have their base, the naval base in Bahrain, which is, after all, an extension of Saudi Arabia. And the other allies of the Saudis, UAE, Qatar, they have bases. They're all, you know, part of this orientation of the national security state towards having this permanent overseas presence, which the Saudis and the Qataris are giving them. So, I mean, I think that's what's really at stake here, ultimately, that they're just it's unthinkable that they could risk actually a rupture in relations with the Saudis over this issue.
Yeah,
you know, or the Qataris, for that matter.
Hey, let me. I'm keeping you just 1 minute here. In 2002 and 2003, when, as the WikiLeaks reveal, the Saudis were saying that they didn't understand why we were choosing to hand Iraq to Iran on a
right.
golden platter. Not just a
right.
silver platter, but a golden one. And I don't know if he was improving upon the idiom or if he just got it confused. But anyway, point being, that's one hell of a nice platter to turn Iraq over to Iran on when, as he complained, I thought the policy was you, me, and Saddam against Iran to keep them hemmed in here. Was there nobody listening to that? Wolfowitz just had an argument that put that to bed and to shame, and no one brought it up again? Or because it seems pretty stupid, right, to accidentally fight a war for Iran. You know?
Well, I mean, of course, the assumption was that that they were going to take over these bases. They'd have a friendly government, a Shia government, to be sure, but one that was not controlled by Iran. Remember, this was this was the completely unrealistic fantasy world that the neocons inhabited. That,
but, I mean,
you know,
they were being told better by the neighbors, by their bestest friends, the Saudi kings.
Well, by their
right?
neighbors, but, you know, who are they going to believe, the Saudis or their Shia friends who've been whispering in their ear, oh, you know, you just help us get in power and we'll make peace with Israel.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
How Chalabi Khan the neocons. That's such
exactly.
a great article. You read that one?
Exactly.
Yeah,
of course.
That guy. Boy, there's some quotes in there that you can only read them. You can't repeat them out loud or else someone will call you a bad name or something. But, yeah, people should really read that thing. It's hilarious and horrible. Anyway, I'm sorry. I've kept you too long. Thanks very much for coming back on my show, Gareth. I like talking to you.
My pleasure as always. Thanks, Scott.
All right, y'all. That's the great Gareth Porter. He's writing at Truth Out and Middle East Eye. This one's at Truth Out. Sunni alliances, Trump-Obama administration, terrorism concerns in Syria. It's really kind of funny when you stop and think about it.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, all, Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I got Jason Ditz on the line. He's the news editor at antiwar.com. That's news.antiwar.com. Welcome back, Jason. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. Oh, let me get my ear goggles on here. All right. Hey, man. So, yeah, good to have you on. Listen, there's been some terrible fighting going on in Yemen lately, and not too many good reporters writing about it, and none that I can get a hold of, but you're keeping track of all of them and what they write about this, so really you're the guy I should be talking to in the first place anyway. Please catch us up. I guess, sorry to burden you, but if you could start with, you know, basically, at least the presumed reason why Saudi Arabia, with America's help, is bombing the crap out of Yemen. What's it all about? How bad is it? What are the consequences? How soon might it be over? These kinds of things.
Well, for the last 20 years or so, Yemen has had a pretty major split with a faction of Shiites called the Houthis. Now, the Houthis got their start when their original founder, who was a fairly powerful politician, made a power-sharing deal with President Saleh. And Saleh reneged on the promise of power-sharing and basically sidelined him. So it started a lot of protests. He cracked down on the protests. They formed a militia. And he was the original Houthi was eventually killed. His father took over. He too was eventually killed by the Saleh government. Now the founder's younger brother is the one that's in charge of it. And they've controlled the northern couple of provinces of Yemen for years now. Starting in the winter, the Hadi government launched an offensive against them, trying to push them out of certain areas where there's some overlap between their Shiites and the Sunnis. And they pretty quickly turned the tables on them, routed the military, and started advancing and ended up taking the capital city. Not long after that, President Hadi in January resigned. The Houthis were trying to come up with a power-sharing deal and some sort of transition to actual elections. Because what most people don't really remember is that Hadi was never actually elected. After Saleh was ousted in the Arab Spring, the U.S. and the U.N. basically imposed Hadi on the country by saying, well, this is going to be your transitional leader. He was one of the top heads of the military. And they held an election in which he was the only person allowed to run and you couldn't vote no. So he became the ruler of Yemen for a couple of years there before he resigned. And now the Saudis have decided they want him back in power. So they in March declared war and started attacking Yemen, saying they're going to continue the war until everyone agrees that Hadi is back in power.
Amazing. All right, so now how bad have the Saudis put the hurt on the Houthis? Because after all, they do have $1 zillion worth of Lockheed products in their arsenal, don't they?
Well, they've certainly hit some Houthis over the course of the war, but a lot of their airstrikes seem to be aimed at the remnants of Yemen's old military structure, military bases in the capital city. A lot of them are missile depots and things like that that they've bombed, setting off explosions that have killed large numbers of civilians. And they also blew up the home / mansion of former President Saleh, who they accuse of being pro-Houthi, even though he was the one that was fighting them for decades. Mm-hmm. And that basically brought Saleh into the war against them, too. Because even though he hasn't been president for 3.5 years, he was president for 30-plus years before that, and he still has the loyalty of an overwhelming majority of the military. So he's been mustering forces to resist the Saudis. So really, the Saudis haven't accomplished much.
And now, so you're saying it really is questionable whether or the degree to which Saleh is working with the Houthis. He's got his own separate faction, is that it?
Right. I mean, certainly they're working together now, but I think at the start of the war, the claims that he was behind the whole thing
right.
didn't really hold water.
I see, yeah. Well, and, you know, I read that he actually is a Zaydi. Is that how you say it? Do you know?
Right.
From the same, you know, religious faction as the Houthis. He's just not a member of that political faction, right?
Right, right. And the real Houthi split with the government was originally a political dispute anyway. It was never really a religious thing.
Right.
And it's only become a religious thing sort of in the last few years as governments have tried to move Sunni tribal factions of fairly Islamist leanings into the northern area to try to get to weaken the Houthis' power base there. And that's really been what's fueled a lot of the sectarian fighting in the north.
Mm. Well, and it sounds like has backfired tremendously. And of course, if we go back to Saleh's attacks on the Houthis that you talked about, that was all with American money and guns that we gave him supposedly to fight Al-Qaeda with.
Absolutely.
And then when he did fight them, as you said, they just turned the tables around. All it does is eventually, in effect, all he's done is make the Houthis more powerful than they ever were by attacking them. Now he's allied with them. And here America and Saudi are fighting on the side of Al-Qaeda in Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula against the Houthis. And by the way, is there any other faction on the ground? Because it doesn't seem like it's going to be Hadi, right? He doesn't even have a faction, really. Or does he? But is there any other faction that can control or you know, be accepted by, is probably a better way to put it, the Sunni majority there? It seems like the Al-Qaeda and Iraq guys got a huge piece of that population anyway.
Well, I mean, that's the key. A lot of these factions have their own little power bases in different parts of the country. Hadi does still have a few troops loyal to him. There's still a pretty substantial secessionist movement in the south that has taken over a few cities. And then you've got Al-Qaeda and a very fledgling ISIS group that are both fighting over a lot of the tribal areas.
And the secessionists, really the Sunni secessionists, those are the socialists?
Right, right. They're the remnants of the former South Yemen government and people that wish South Yemen was still independent.
Yeah. Now, when the people, because it seemed like they had a great number of factions all come together to agree on one thing, that they wanted rid of Saleh, starting with the Arab Spring back in 2011, and of course, as you mentioned, you know, Hillary Clinton just came in there and frustrated all of their aims and goals and plans by foisting Hadi on them, basically, in this phony one-man election, which is kind of hilarious in a tragic kind of way. But did they have any kind of coalition that they were working on before Hillary screwed them like that, that, you know, somebody that the different factions could agree on that presumably would disinclude Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and obviously, I guess, would not include the Houthis, or maybe it could, I don't know.
Well, there definitely were political factions that were forming. It's not really clear who was going to win out there, but there was a lot of momentum behind having some semblance of a democratic election. And it just simply never panned out.
Yeah. Man, and so, yeah, it seems really incongruent, though, that, well, you know what we're going to do? We're just going to bomb them until they put the guy we want back in power there. And that can't happen. And that's never happened in the history of humankind, nor will it. So now the music's playing and you don't have time to answer. When we get back, I'll ask you about, you know, if you think that there's, or actually I'll probably forget. So remember the question from right now. Is there any chance that the Saudis could achieve their goals, or maybe any indication that they're changing their goals to something even within the realm of possibility? Possible? I don't know. Jason Ditz, news.antiwar.com. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself, WallStreetWindow.com. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. Unreal. Hey, I'm on the line with Jason Ditz. He's the news editor at antiwar.com, news.antiwar.com. And we're talking about this horrible war in Yemen. I don't know if you can give us a ballpark rundown on the casualties and that kind of thing, but before the break, my question was along the lines of, you know, light at the end of the tunnel here. Are the Saudis adjusting to the real world we live in here with their stated aims and goals and their actual, you know, strategy and tactics, which seems so, you know, contradictory to each other kind of a thing? So what do you say?
Well, it's not clear that the Saudis are adjusting their tactics or their war goals. They're still insisting that they figure they're going to win this eventually, even though they don't appear to have accomplished anything in the last 2 months except killing a few thousand people. The exact numbers aren't really clear. The remnants of the Hadi government seem to be starting to hint at openness to going back to the pre-war situation and the pre-resignation situation where they were talking with the Houthis and trying to come up with some sort of transitional government and a pathway to actual elections, which was all the Houthis really wanted in the first place. A lot of the sort of aides to Hadi are saying they're going to be in Geneva this weekend for the UN brokered peace talks to sort of try to hash out a deal with the Houthis. Although Hadi himself has insisted he's not going to attend those, or if he's going to attend those talks, he's not going to talk with the Houthis under any circumstance, and is still insisting that he wants to be installed back in power by the Saudis unconditionally, even though it's pretty clear at this point that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Well, what a mess. And I'm sorry, on the ballpark, do you know how many hundreds or thousands of people have been hurt or killed in this thing?
I would guess it's in the low thousands for killed. I'm not really sure. Certainly several hundred of them are civilians. It's really hard to say, though, because we don't get a lot of good reporting out of Yemen. It's a lot of, well, there's a report of an airstrike that killed 10 people in this city and report of an airstrike that killed 20 in this city, but we don't really get good numbers out of anyone there.
Right. And now, one of the other things that we do see, though, are reports, I guess especially in terms of what they call impending humanitarian crises because of the breakdown in distribution of food and water in a country where they import 90% of their food, which is unreal.
Right. And that's really the most important thing here is like you say, Yemen does not grow a lot of food. They don't have a great economy either. So the fact that they've been able to have their sort of trivial little oil industry and their, semi-substantial coffee exporting industry, keep them importing enough food to feed their population's been something of a surprise. But since the war began, the Saudis and their allies, Egypt, United Arab Emirates, they've got a naval blockade across the whole country, and they're being very difficult to shipping companies that are trying to bring food into the country, to the point where a lot of the usual shipping companies are saying they're simply not going to go to Yemen because it's too much of a hassle to wait parked off the coast for weeks while one country searches their ship, they get a little closer to the coast, and then another country demands to search the ship too. The Saudis are insisting that it's because they think Iran is smuggling weapons into the country, although they never seem to be able to find any of them. And from the looks of things on the ground, the Houthis are just using weapons that they looted out of military bases. So it doesn't appear like they're awash in Iranian weapons or anything. But it's really keeping the food out of the country. We've had reports in the last couple of months. Price of flour was formerly subsidized before the war, and it had gone up tenfold, and then it went up another tenfold, and then a few days later, you just couldn't buy flour anymore because it had all been sold.
All right. I'm sorry. Let me switch to Libya now in the time we have left here, 2-3 minutes. It's basically still two governments, the country divided in half at war.
Well, it's more than two now. I mean, there's two that have any sort of international recognition. There's the sort of Misrata/Tripoli government in the west, and then the Tobruk government in the east, which the eastern government is the one that's internationally recognized and backed by Egypt, but they have a lot less territory. We also have ISIS in the country, holding a pretty substantial amount of the central coast. And Al-Qaeda's allies have started fighting against ISIS over some of that territory.
Yeah, well, and I guess that's really all just branding, not really a chain of command, but they're just trying to raise money and trying to figure out what to call themselves to raise the most money and get the most international support. Is that it?
Well, that's certainly how it started, but
they were smart. They'd all call themselves Al-Qaeda so they could get that Israeli and Turkish money there.
Right. There's this group, Jaish al-Islam, that back in October declared itself loyal to ISIS and declared itself part of ISIS and started calling itself ISIS. At the time, it wasn't clear that there was any formal tie, although since then there have been reports that ISIS from Syria has actually started sending some advisors to sort of get them on the same page. And they've really gone from just holding part of the city of Derna to controlling a fair amount of the coast, which, of course, is the only territory that really matters in Libya because that's where everybody lives.
Yeah. Oh, man, what a disaster. And so, I guess, is anybody doing a Libya body count at all? Does anybody know how many people are dying in this crisis? Of course, you got to count all the people drowning. And by the way, you know, I'm sorry, man, to you, Jason, everybody else. I just haven't kept up with this nearly enough, but it seems like all the pictures on TV of the refugees from Libya are mostly all black, and I wonder whether that's part of the same system of anti-black pogroms that broke out right after the war in 2011. Especially in Misrata, and all of that. You know, is that really why those people are refugees? Not just because they're hungry or whatever, but because they're right now a persecuted racial minority?
Well, I'm sure that's a part of it. That's got to be an aspect of it because, of course, the Misrata militia now controls Tripoli. They control a fair chunk of the western half of the country. And they've insisted all along that the black people were all loyal to Gaddafi, so they're all automatically suspect. So there really has been, virtually since Gaddafi was ousted, a movement to sort of chase them out of this town and chase them out of that town. And
now they're drowning in the Mediterranean Sea.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That's a disaster. All right. Listen, thanks so much for coming back on the show, Jason. It's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, y'all. That is Jason Ditz. He's keeping track of all the bad news, dude. News.antiwar.com. He's the managing news editor at antiwar.com. News.antiwar.com. We'll be right back. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, y'all, welcome back. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Stop by scotthorton.org. You can listen to, for the rest of your life, you can listen to the audio at scotthorton.org. I got 3,800 interviews going back to 2003. Hey, look in the right-hand margin. Syrian Al-Qaeda branch accused of massacring minority Druze. Militants linked to Al-Qaeda have shot dead at least 20 members of Syria's minority Druze community during a standoff at a village in a northwestern province, according to monitoring and opposition groups. Yeah. You know, Prothero was right. He said on the show, hey, man, you know, the U.S. government, the Obama administration, called al-Nusra terrorists and called them al-Qaeda in Iraq from the very beginning, as soon as they poked their head up and called themselves al-Nusra. And I said, you know what? I know that that's true, dude. I read it in McClatchy newspapers. But that doesn't mean they hadn't backed them all along anyway. And as Gareth says, yeah, now they're basically just not even pretending. But, yeah, man, you think the war in Syria has been bad so far, just wait until the government in Damascus falls and there's no more state army at all, and it's all just sectarian militias fighting. And just wait until Saudi, till al-Nusra and ISIS heal their rifts and come back together again. I mean, at this point, it looks to me more like Nusra are the useful idiots of the Islamic State, right? They take all the territory, then the Islamic State occupies it. Thanks. Hence a lot of the rift between them. Hey, we fought for all that territory. Yep, thanks. And then they move on. Nusra more like the movable army and the Islamic State, more interested in holding territory already won. Anyway, they're going to come back together again at some point. And, you know, I don't know. I'm sorry for beating a dead horse. I just don't know a better way to put it. That you think about during the Iraq War, and I'm talking about, you know, not decent human beings, but for those who actually indulge in political power and live in Washington, D.C. and are part of all that consensus. A lot of times, man, they'll say, you know, the war, old Saddam, he had to go, but they shouldn't have de-bothified the whole government and abolished the Iraqi army. That was the real mistake, right? Well, that's exactly what they're trying to do in Syria right now. De-bothify the government and abolish the army. Well, then what happens? Well, let's see. What happened when that was the wrong thing to do in Iraq? A giant civil war and 1 million people killed, huh? So here we've had a giant civil war in Syria with 100,000 or two already killed. And now they're going to make sure to abolish the last vestiges of the secular state there and replace it with a jihadi war. I mean, again, back to Gareth's piece here to go ahead and beat a dead horse because, hey, Ignatius says Obama said to the Gulf leaders who are funding Al-Qaeda in Syria, hey, guys, keep your guys under control, okay? Not knock it off. But just, you know, I don't know, try to keep them from being too bad or something. Yeah, no, we don't want a post-Assad regime to be controlled by extremists from Islamic State or Al-Qaeda. No, but Arar al-Sham, that'll be fine. Or if we can rename Al-Qaeda the Army of Conquest, then we'll do that. It's insanity. I can't believe this. And, you know, I'm sorry to repeat myself like that. I know I said that for the first time probably a couple of years ago. Wait a minute. They're debotifying the government and abolishing the army? I seem to remember some recent history that says that maybe that isn't always the best idea. But anyway, on they go. Obama to send 500 more troops to Iraq to fight in the Anbar province. U.S. troops to set up new base outside of ISIS-held Ramadi. Obama not ruling out additional escalation. That's all at news.antiwar.com. Again, Syrian Al-Qaeda branch massacre Druze. This one's a good one by Khan Hallinan. The dark Saudi-Israeli plot to tip the scales in Syria. Good write-up by our friend Khan there. And then, man, you just got to love this. Oh, you got all these stupid conspiracy theories about how the Islamic State and Assad are in on it together. Well, you see, you got the Islamic State and al-Nusra, and then you got the rebels. Yeah, nice try. Al-Nusra and ISIS are the rebels. The rebels are Nusra and ISIS's arms procurement division. That's all they are. If Nusra are the useful idiots of ISIS, what does that make the FSA, for Christ's sake? Bashar al-Assad and Hezbollah, they're all in on it with ISIS to fight against the rebels, our heroes. What? Really? That's funny, because here's 22 dead as Hezbollah repels an ISIS attack across the Lebanese border. Oh, yeah. Just wait until Damascus is done falling and the rest of this war spreads into Lebanon. They haven't had a good all-encompassing 15-year-long civil war in 20 years. 25. We got to get that show on the road. That country ain't hardly destroyed enough. And at the same time, Hezbollah is fighting ISIS and fighting off American conspiracy theories about their cooperation with ISIS. Iraqi Shiite militias accuse the U.S. of deliberately targeting them. Huh? No, we didn't do that. What are you talking about? Again, Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. Linking to a Daily Beast piece here. Iraqi militias threaten U.S. over friendly fire incident. Oh, they're pissed off. Wouldn't that be funny if America was really, you know, there have been some quote-unquote accidental weapons drops to the Islamic State. And on one hand, come on, we're talking about military intelligence, right? That's a cliche for a reason. So if they're dropping a lot of weapons to these or those guys and some of them go to the wrong side of the line, I don't know, man. I could see that being, you know, an easy mistake for the military to make. And at the same time, why would they need to drop supplies to the Islamic State when the Islamic State has taken $1 zillion worth of weapons and material and cash from what the Americans had given to the Iraqi government, the so-called Iraqi government, the Shiistan government based in Baghdad, that they left behind from Mosul and Ramadi? That's all just been taken. On the other hand, they are, again, fighting for the Mujahideen, in effect, fighting for the Islamic State in Syria still, as we've been talking about all show long and 4 years in a row now. So, if they're backstabbing their Shiite, wannabes, what do you call them? The people that the Americans wanted to be their sock puppets there? There's got to be some kind of French term for that or something, right? The people you install in power who then tell you to get the hell out and screw you. There's got to be a word for that. Anyway. I guess it wouldn't be that surprising. Would it? In context? I'm thinking not so much. Obama says, we don't have a strategy, only because he couldn't explain, because it's so contradictory.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Man, I'm already almost out of time for doing a radio show again today, which I guess is okay, because, man, I'm hungry. I gotta start eating breakfast, dude. I'm too old for a coffee diet alone. By the way, Darren's Coffee at darrenscoffee.com. They'll sell you coffee. Free shipping with promo code Scott. Hey, free shipping, that's a lot. That's like $6 off or something if you just buy a little bit. If you buy a lot, it's even more than that off. By the way, Darren, send me more coffee. I ran out of coffee. Thanks. All right, lots of things to say, very little time, so I'll try not to elaborate too much of this. Well, let me save this economics thing till last, because that's going to last. First of all, the reason thing. Did you hear about this? So, this judge, this pig, she sentenced Ross Ulbricht to the rest of his natural life in prison, no possibility of parole, to the federal pen for running the Silk Road. Yeah, he was accused of hiring a hitman. Nobody ever proved it in court. He wasn't charged with that. He wasn't convicted of that. He's presumed innocent as far as I'm concerned on that, as far as the state is supposed to be concerned. He wasn't sentenced for that. So it must not have been true if they decided to not pursue those charges. Why wouldn't they have pursued those charges? Steady ran a black market website. Oh, for Christ's sake. Give him a year and a half or something. The rest of his life in prison? For running a black market website where people sold pot to each other? And sometimes heroin? Cry me a freaking river. Boy, it's like our civilization only ceased existing because of what this guy had done. So anyway, I'm off topic. The point is, this judge sends him to life, and then so guess what happened? Over at the Reason Magazine website, in the comment section, a bunch of people said, oh yeah, you know, when the revolution comes, she's going up against the wall. Uh-huh. And they are now being investigated. The Department of Justice issued a subpoena to Reason Magazine, said you have to give us all the information you have about the ISP, you know, addresses and this, that, and the other thing, everything you know about who these people are. Anonymous trolls in the Reason comment section. And actually, I'm not sure the follow-up whether Reason tried to fight it at all, but you can read a great explanation of what's going on here at Pope Hat. I think it's just popehat.com. A guy named Ken White did a great write-up about this and about how they don't have a case against these guys for some kind of criminal charges for what they said in a million years. This is nothing but blowing off steam and nothing like a credible threat. And guess what? Our temporary, limited constitutional republic has been around for a hell of a long time by now, and we already have these lines drawn by the courts. We already have this figured out of what you're allowed to say, what you're not allowed to say about violence and threatening other people. and these commenters were way on the safe side of the line. And he gives an example, a better example, or he gives an example of someone on the wrong side of the line, the white supremacist Turner, who, wasn't he a FBI informant all along? Whatever happened to that? But anyway, apparently he had one time said, boy, I wish this guy would get dead and that some of his followers had killed the guy. And then he did it again and he posted names and faces and addresses of judges. And they had a credible argument that he had a real expectation that he was, you know, taking out a hit on these people, essentially. Not just blowing off steam, that he was really trying to accomplish their deaths. Saying, oh yeah, one day when the revolution comes, the judges are gonna get it, is not, you know, it's 1,000 miles away. It's, their case is a joke, but the point is really, right? The chilling effect. That's what Terry Parker would have said. It's the chilling effect. Look what they're doing. They're issuing subpoenas against libertarian websites for information on their commenters. Maybe they were just waiting around for an excuse to do that, and they decided this one would be good enough. And what we really need to do is just start and put in the fear of people that, like, hey, man, I got a house and a mortgage and a family and a job, and am I really going to put myself in the FBI sites for expressing political opinions on the internet? Maybe it's not that important to me. Maybe that's what they're after in the first place. But I would really urge you to read the thing at Pope Hat. It's by a guy named Ken White. I'm 90% sure of that. Wasn't that the same name as the FBI agent in Phoenix who was concerned about all the Arabs in flight school? Anyway, probably not the same guy. I think I got that screwed up. It's not quite right, is it? I'm almost right. Not quite. Ben White is a pro-Palestinian activist and a highway in Austin. I get these things mixed up. It happens. But that reason thing is huge, man. Just like, you know, their investigation of antiwar.com, the FBI's investigation of antiwar.com, that's why I got fired from there. Well, laid off. That they lost a lot of donors because people are saying, hey, I love giving money to you, but not when I know the FBI is looking at who's giving money to you. Trying to make a case that you're an agent of a foreign power. I know you're innocent, but include me out. I'm sorry. Why? Because people got higher priorities in life, which is fair, which is understandable, which is probably, again, why the FBI did what they did in the first place. Or at least it's a fringe benefit of their evil and illegal persecution of antiwar.com. And, you know, If the ACLU ends up winning their lawsuit on behalf of Eric and Justin, then I'm going to sue the FBI for all my lost wages. Because they're the reason that I got fired. Although then again, I'm not so sure I really want to pull my head up that far. But the way I see it, those bastards owe me a few thousand dollars. Not that I was ever getting paid much. I paid that much. It wouldn't amount to much, but I got damages, man. Sons of bitches. All right, and now, oh, UN peacekeepers. Don't let me forget to say this while I still got time. UN report says its peacekeepers regularly exchange goods for sex. You know where I'm reading that? I'm reading that on Al Jazeera. I got Al Jazeera on my local AT&T U-verse cable network hookup TV thing out of the corner of my eye here. And I'm sorry, because I know I promised you guys I'd watch nothing but Fox News. But, man, it's hard. Sorry for whining. I just can't stand it, man. And, you know, Al Jazeera, I was joking about this with Jeff Tucker. It's not that it's that great. It's just that it's boring old adult news. And I just prefer that to all the graphics and all the spin and hype and bright colors and pithy phrases, you know. Shep Smith, where he just omits so many words out of each sentence. It's just, here's some people going, yeah, well, you know, there are a bunch of, here's, you know, this is a story. It's not my particular expertise. It's just an example. this morning on the Al Jazeera show. They go, well, you know, there's an organization of survivors of rape by priests and bishops and so forth. And they want the Pope to turn over all the files to the cops because, hey, raping kids is a crime. And so screw your internal Catholic Church processes. We want this to be investigated. Here's an interview with the lady. Here's what the controversy is. And here's what, you know, the comments are from the relevant institutions. Okay, next story. That's it. It was just a news story, right? It's the kind of news story that you don't get to see on the news. All you ever see on the news is a bunch of slick crap. And on Al Jazeera, it was just, well, here's a story. It was kind of nice. Like, watch this news story. I guess I am pretty old now, huh? I skated vert last night. But I do have gray hair in my beard, and I do appreciate adult news. And yes, Al Jazeera is just a front for the Qatari government, which backs Al-Qaeda in Syria, just like everybody else, I guess. But anyway, here they are. The UN, well, they got their baby blue helmet and their white painted tanks, and they're just such nice guys, and they only want to help, and they're only here to help and rape children. And they're like Bill Cosby, man. They're the best rapists in the world. The fact that people turn to them for keeping peace, it just blows me away, man. Think critically for a second, would you? In fact, just Google UN and rape and read about, you know, I don't know, 70 years worth of UN rape and see how much you still love them. And I'm glad I saved the economics thing. That would have taken the whole segment. Maybe I'll save it to tomorrow if you're not lucky. Thanks for listening, guys. See ya.